The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
Welcome back to us and you!
Hi!
I'm Brent!
I'm Lydia!
And we're gonna talk Starman!
It's been a while.
It has been a while. Kind of an unexplained hiatus. Which, you know, the unexplained part, I think, is the problem. I should have been like, oh, we're gonna have busy lives for about a month, 2 months, 3 months, and then we'll jump back into it.
Yeah.
You know, in the future, we'll be better at planning out maybe little breaks here and there, as we know we're both going to be busy.
Mm-hmm. So,
apologies for that, because we are dedicated to talking the whole Starman epic, because it's fun.
Yes, thanks for still hanging out with us, whoever you are. Hi, again.
However many there are.
Yeah.
So this is our 37th episode.
Oh, wow, okay.
We are going to be talking Starman issue 30.
Yeah, 30.
Yup. So should we start with a little on this date flashback?
Oh, sure, yeah. Thing? Yeah, this was released in May 1997, and quite a lot of things happened in 1997, May of 1997, but I'm just going to zero in on one thing, which is Michael Jackson and the Bee Gees were inducted into Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Huh.
Yeah.
Nice.
When I was growing up, my parents didn't really let me listen to pop music, but my best friend was really into Michael Jackson. Yeah, and like she would, whenever I went to her place, she would like play the music videos of things like Thriller and what was the other one? Another Day. I can't remember the title of it. Oh, people might shoot me now, but shoot might not be the best verb to use at this sensitive time.
Well,
but,
I mean, sadly, that's pretty much every other week in America.
Yeah. So that was an interesting thing for me to notice on the website. Or, you know, Michael Jackson.
This kind of shows my little bit of ignorance about growing up in Singapore, but I never did it. So what you gonna do? You know, for me, especially during the 80s and maybe early 90s, I mean, Michael Jackson was just huge, you know. He's the king of pop. Mm. What was he like? Was your friend being really into Michael Jackson, was that kind of a novelty, or was he also pretty standardly known and
Pretty standard, yeah, in Singapore, in fact, because I would say that a lot of Singaporean musical influences came from the UK. So, like, you know, American bands didn't really start to get popular until cable TV became more popular. Because cable TV had MTV. Before cable TV became, like, more standardized, because before that, cable TV was kind of expensive. So sometime in the mid-90s, I think, cable TV started to become more of a, like, middle-income kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So people started to have it, and they watched MTV, and suddenly a lot of people got to know a lot about American music. Yeah, but other than that, before that, it was really very British, I would say. Yeah, so like Westlife and was it Savage Garden? I can't remember.
I remember them, yeah.
I think it was Savage Garden. Oh, wait, Savage Garden's Australian, but then, you know, Australia is too in that Commonwealth thingy, so we are the Commonwealth.
Australia, Canada, the UK, I mean, really.
Yeah, so a lot of, like, Australian acts were really popular here as well. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I picked out. Nice. It's a thing for me, I feel, because right now in my adulthood, I feel like I'm getting more acquainted with Michael Jackson in a way, because the Japanese love Michael Jackson.
They do.
Right? And I dance, I go for dance lessons here in Japan. So my dance teacher, she loves dancing to Michael Jackson. So every week I dance to Michael Jackson.
My stepsister, isn't that, wait, not stepsister, sister-in-law, sorry, is like a huge Michael Jackson fan. So basically for her birthdays, the safe bet is if there's some type of like Michael Jackson picture book or thing like that, that would be something she'd appreciate.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow, that must be like pretty expensive now though.
It kind of depends. Like, you can just go to a bookstore and find something. It's more of like, now we're kind of at the point of like, do we keep on doing something like that? Or are we going to get to the point where we're just like, hey, here's something. She's like, oh, great, thanks, another one. Yeah, okay. That you obviously don't really know about, or that I already have. You know, it's kind of like when I was a kid growing, liking comic books, and you just get random presence of like really crap stuff. Like, oh, you like comics, so you must like this. Like, well, I'm 13, and what you got me is basically intended for a 5-year-old.
Uh-huh.
But you know, thanks.
Yeah.
I feel like we haven't talked at all about the Bee Gees, but really, the only thing I know about the Bee Gees is I know "Staying Alive." I've probably, like, if I heard a few other songs, like, I know that. But I also know that if you ever have to give someone CPR,
know that. Yeah,
the timing is basically to the, if you sing to yourself, staying alive, that tempo is basically the tempo you want to use for CPR.
Yeah, I actually saw that on Grey's Anatomy. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Neat. And they sang "How Deep Is Your Love." You know that song?
No.
How deep is your love? Oh, how deep is your love? You don't know that song?
No. I'm really? Not very cool.
Oh, okay. That's like their other hit. So
the Bee Gees?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And apparently they released like an album. Was it an album called Saturday Night Fever? Yeah. So
yes.
So that it's from the same album, "Staying Alive" and "How Deep Is Your Love." Yeah. So they got inducted into the Hall of Fame along with Michael Jackson on the same day, and they were like really popular in Singapore as well, Australian. So. Yeah. Okay, so that's all I have from May 97. I mean, we could talk about other stuff. Okay.
Nah.
Yay.
We want to get into the issue.
We do.
And that's issue 30, in which I have the synopsis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this issue starts off with some people talking about sweaters, and then, oh no, there's an explosion. Just in time. Well, not really in time. But, you know, then we get some little ghostings. one of the things that's kind of hard to recap about this particular issue is that it's not so much a constant, steady through line as I would say the first half of it is more like little vignettes. More tone settings. Because soon after we have the ghost sighting, then we jump over to Jack and Sadie having a little talk and a little date and a little, is it a date? Is it not a date? Well, it feels like a date. Oh, we're talking some more. And then you know, we jump back to the ghost at a different time of day, different day, who knows? Then we have Jack reading a nice little letter, giving him the fill-up of what's been happening with Diane and Wesley.
Mm.
Then he talks with his dad kind of about the letter and about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
We get an even later scene with the ghost being ghosty and thinking, ah, I need to talk with Jack. Mm. Hey, look, there he is. Jack talking with a stoolie that has family connections with Jack's family, leading them to the maker of the bomb, the infernal Mr. Pip, where Jack goes crashing through the door, fighting Pip and Pip's merry men, thinking, you know what, I'm getting kind of good at this. Except, as he's kind of thinking that, well, he has to get saved by the ghost, saying, I saved your life, and I would ask service of you in exchange. And that's basically a very brief summation of the flow of this issue.
Yeah. A vast!
Yes!
I don't know what that means, actually. I only know it's one of those things that pirates say. I don't really know what it means.
I think it might be stop, but... Vast ye mateys, stop, I think, maybe? I don't know.
Okay. Pirates. Thank you for that synopsis, though.
It was just a very quick one. It was a very jump around issue, which
yeah,
not to give it away, had to me strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we start with the cover?
Yes. Mm. It's I was surprised when I looked at it because it was like so plain.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like a pencil drawing.
But yeah.
Sketch, maybe not really a pencil drawing. Yeah. I can't figure out what's that. Tentacle-y thing behind what's his name
the black pirate. I don't know, they haven't done a clear job of giving him a name.
Mm-mm-mm. Wait, didn't you say that was it Tony Harris or Robinson who liked
Tony Harris digs pirates,
right? Okay.
They are kind of on record as saying that it was Tony Harris's interest in pirates and kind of including little pirate theme stuff in the earlier issues that kind of directly led to Robinson scripting this story.
I see. Cool. Okay.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't really tell what the tentacly thing is. Like, is it supposed to be a Kraken, something else? I mean, I like this cover in that it, you know, I think it obviously is trying to get that kind of old treasure mappy feel to
I only just noticed that it's a map, isn't it, that those orange bits, the lines and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And that compass thingy, do you call them, I don't know, is this a compass either, like, has it always been on the cover? No, right?
The one by the inn is always there. The little navigator star.
Yeah. I'm talking about the one on the big one on the lower left.
No, I mean that's just for this issue.
Okay. Good. I was like, wait, has that been like right in my face all this time?
It feels like it could be though, right?
Yeah. Ha. Okay.
So I'm gonna run the risk of over explaining something, but if you look underneath Jack, you can see the kind of Harris 96.
Okay. Yeah.
And then underneath that you see After Pile.
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking this because I know you consider yourself a relatively new reader of comics.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you know the significance of having, like, After Pile on
there? Absolutely not.
Okay. Then I will share with you, and maybe with a few listeners who also don't know. It's kind of... Now, the Pile they're talking about, I'm assuming Pile is an artist. That, I'll admit, I don't know who Pile is or what this is a reference to. But a lot of times on comic covers, when they pay homages to other comics in the past, other famous images, famous things like that, the illustrators will give a reference to it. So that after pile is kind of letting people know that Tony Harris is very much referencing a previous work of art.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now we have to Google pile.
Yeah, I thought about that, but I figured it was probably just a pirate artist that I really wouldn't know too much about.
I'll be lazy
with my homework. But I just throw that out there because, you know, sometimes you will see people doing references to classic covers like maybe the Amazing Fantasy 15, which introduced Spider-Man, and you'll see someone in there being like, you know, after... Jeez, and now that I say it, I can't remember if that cover was actually Ditko or Kirby. Nerds. But you'll see them referencing that or... you know, other famous just comic pages and kind of being like, yes, we are using this staging, this kind of pattern from an earlier one to use our work.
Okay.
You know, a very medium referential thing, but just want to share that.
That is very informative. Thank you very much. Interesting. Nice take on it. Okay. Do we go in?
Yeah.
All right. Oh, I just realized that there are blood stains on the map.
Really? Oh, yeah. I missed that.
I was going to flip the page. I was like, wait. Huh. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. That gives a little bit of dimension to the picture. Definitely. Okay, so I'm in the book.
In it.
Yeah. Shells.
This is one of the things I liked about the layout of this page is because of the coloring and how the eye flows across it, it was easy for me to read the page without focusing on the end explosion.
Okay.
Like, obviously it's there, so I see it, but it's still kind of easy to be caught off guard by it.
Yep.
Like, oh, here's this thing, and then, oh, man, there's a big boom. These people are full-on exploded. I just kind of like that.
Mm-mm-mm.
You know, it's not a big enough event to require putting it on its own separate page, but it's kind of done in such a way where it still sneaks up on you. It's not directly in your face or overpowering the rest of the page. Very deft.
Yeah. Interesting choices, don't you think? Like, you know, let's make this one long and big. Right? And then this one goes on top of the other one. Like, that's how... The explosion.
Yeah.
It goes onto like the back of the panel before it. It overlaps. Yeah. Mm-mm. It's always like, to me, it's always like, I was just reading through this and I was like, actually, comic books are very much like movies on paper or something like that. Yes. You know, so you just like, but then again, you can't really say that because they are not movies. They are just comics. In a genre by themselves. And I don't know, it's just these little choices, like,
yeah,
that just fascinate me. Like, how do people think of this? Like, why do they make this panel go on top of this one? Yeah, it's
you know, I'm not the best at articulating it, but I love how all those decisions are made to kind of have the human eye follow things in a certain pattern. Maybe I'm just speaking for me here, but when I see that long panel with shells on it, my eyes are very much drawn to not just the shells bit, but like we've got the two decorative, I'm going to call them bricks, that like form the header of the building. Does that make sense? My eyes are very much drawn to that space. Like, I almost have to force my eyes down to look at the people in the front of the building. But where my eyes are drawn is that, like, almost like a train track pattern pushing my eyes from that do you think you'll like it dialogue balloon over to that top of the next panel.
Yeah.
Just the way everyone is kind of thing is lined up vertically, it's really easy to cut across that page and then go down.
Yeah.
Which is why I was saying, like, oh, there's the explosion, because my eyes don't really want to go down to that lower right-hand corner with how this page is laid out. And it's just fantastic.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I also love how you look at the thing and you immediately know that Shells is a department store. I don't know about you, but like, that was for me. I was like, oh, this is a department store. And I didn't realize that I had realized that it was a department store, you know?
Yeah, but yeah. It is.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
But what's not cool is, of course, explosions. Aww.
Yeah.
With the burning smell.
It's like, I mean, no people died in here because, like, Ted was talking about it. Okay. And shall we go to the next page with our bandana-clad eyeless pirate?
Let's go.
Okay.
We've seen him a few times in the past.
We have?
This is probably, I think, haven't we?
I'm not sure. I'm sorry. It's been too long.
I know. It's been months. I feel like we've seen him here and there. Just like a, like, almost kind of as like, hey, by the way, this is around. It's coming up. Don't be completely caught off guard. But this is the most time we've spent with this character.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And,
do you have any standout thoughts?
Well, I don't read, not about the pictures, but when I was reading the text, I feel like I immediately knew he was a pirate.
Yeah.
Because, well, there's a lot of imagery going on when it comes to, like, the words that are used in his, would you call it, would you call this a narration? I think I would.
Yeah.
So it's like introducing his backstory. So standout thoughts is who is this pirate and why are we talking about him so poetically? So that's that was my first standout thought.
I'll admit that I kind of felt that on these opening two pages of the pirate that they were kind of piling on the pirateness a little bit thick. Let's get all our jargon out here. Let's really make sure that everyone knows, pirate lingo. Like, it was it was poetic and it was nice, but I'll admit, like, after the two pages of it, I was kind of like,
yeah,
all right, you've got me convinced he's a pirate.
Yeah, we get it. He's a pirate.
A little bit more of where are you going with this?
Yeah.
I'm willing to go on this journey, but you gotta give me a bit more than jargon.
Yeah. We talk about, they do try to establish, like, backstory, you know, in the page following these two.
Yes.
But, yeah, I get it. It's like, there could be other ways to tell people that he's a pirate. I don't know. I think maybe, because when it comes to Robinson, he likes to have this build-up. Like, that's what I know. I've noticed he likes to, like, really draw you into this universe and, like, pile on the adjectives.
He does. And usually he sucks me right in there. I'm like, yeah, go for it. Give me more of that. But this time, and maybe it was because we've taken a bit of a break from doing it, but I kind of found myself wanting to be like, can we get a little bit more meat instead of just sauce? It's a bit sauce, but I want a little bit more meat to that sauce.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we move on?
Yes, and I think we should move on to saying that this is Infernal Devices Part 1 with James mm-hmm. Robinson writer, Tony Harris doing pencils, Wade Von Grobiger being our inker, Trish Mulvihill being our guest colorist, Oakley NJQ being our letterers, Chuck Kim assistant editor, Archie Goodwin editor, and Jack Knight created by James Robinson and Tony Harris.
Cool.
And that's all I got to add to these two pages.
Okay. Was it two or three? Oh, it's two. All right. Kept counting it as three. All right. Still haven't gotten the reference to that muscular Greek god-looking guy with wings at the back.
Oh, right, right. You know, just architecture.
Architecture, right. Oh, yeah, he might be an opal, that's why.
I think that's what it is.
Opal has stuff like that, yeah. Okay, I'm excited to go to the next page, so...
Yes! Let's go.
Okay. It's Jack, isn't it? Like, I was like, whoa, he has aged, and I realized that it's just the beard. So, yeah, he's with Sadie, and I actually remember Sadie, even though, you know, we had that hiatus, but she's that really, like, that lady whom he bumped into at Turk County, that first time, yeah, I remember her. I was always wondering about her, like, why was she so mean? And then today we found out. But
yeah.
Before that, do you see that person in the background with the Superman t-shirt?
Yes.
Like, what? Well.
I like it, you know.
It's yeah.
Kinda like people in this world wearing, like, you know, t-shirts of either famous people they like or... Mm. It kind of makes sense. Like, someone would be selling Superman t-shirts if Superman existed.
Okay. Because, you see, the way, like, that person is, like, revealing the Superman sign, and, like, her friend is, or his friend is, like...
Yeah, and a little surprise.
Yeah, like... So I was like, oh, maybe it's like this, what do you call it, Easter egg or whatever? Like, they want to sort of, like, reference that this is happening right now in Gotham. Oh, no, Gotham is Batman. This is happening right now in, where's Superman from?
Metropolis,
yeah. And then, so, like, to keep things current, like, you know.
Maybe.
This is all happening in the same timeline, and that's why, you know, people are like, who's Superman? Who's Superman in Metropolis? And then when this person goes like, ha! And the guy who's like, are you Superman in Opal? I know, this is just like my little fanfic.
I like it.
Okay. Yeah, so that's over for me. What do you have to say about this page?
Kind of the same thing. I was initially like, ooh. Jack looks a little different, but it's like, oh, well, I guess Tony Harris is just, you know, kind of changing up technique a little bit or expanding it. And in the other pages, he looks a bit more on model. but, you know, the kind of featheriness of the lines did distract me at first. But, you know, hey, it works.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked how much of these 1, 2, 3, 4 pages, how much of them are necessary exposition.
Mm-mm-mm.
You know, because it's kind of like reminding people, like you said, who is this woman? Where mm-hmm. have we seen her? What's her importance in it? It's kind of letting people know who maybe are newer readers, who maybe haven't even seen her in the past, what's been their history. And it is also kind of like setting up, like, what are they? You know, comics in a way is a medium, in a way kind of like TV, arguably, that has to be able to work in shorthand. And so kind of having it out there, like, are they dating? Are they not? What's going on? Has to be sometimes a bit more on the nose stated in on the page than you would be in real life.
Mm-mm-mm.
All that said, I think the first two pages, I did kind of feel everything was a bit more, a bit too on the nose and a little bit clunky dialogue-wise.
Yeah. Wait, you mean for Sadie and Jack?
Yeah. Like, I don't want to say it was bad, but it was, it felt more like it was there to serve a purpose than to sound like an actual dialogue, like an actual conversation. Excuse me, are we dating? Hi, we have had coffee 3 times. Like, you know, admittedly, they're not going to say it like that, but I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. It's like the conversation doesn't really roll off each other. No, like their lines don't really roll off each other. They sort of like bump. Like, yes. Right? Yeah, I get it.
It's like when TV, rather than being clever, tries to be clever.
Yeah.
And I kind of bumped against that a lot during at least the first 2 pages of this until Jack started being a bit too pompous Jackie. And that kind of rang me like, no, man, I'm totally like this, butta, butta, buh. Was like, well, hey, you're still kind of a jerk at times.
Yeah. Ooh, my mic. Okay, yeah. I think it serves as a good reminder that Jack isn't perfect. He's actually kind of shit with his personal relationships.
Yeah.
That involve romance, I think. I feel like he's quite a decent friend. Yeah, but when it comes to, like, romantic relationships, he's pretty crap. Doesn't treat them right. Well, unquote.
Yeah, and I think there's something to... We could rope in the elitism in that of, like, he's got... I don't know. Not power issues, but he definitely has those... He has very human foibles of, like, wanting to prove himself, assert himself, while not always quite getting it right.
And I don't know. I feel like Sadie's a pretty tough character, so I don't know what's going to happen with him and Sadie. But can we just go to this bit where... Where was it? They're still talking, and then Sadie seems very savvy about the whole, like, you know, she was asking him, do they know who planted the bomb in the department store? Was it the mist? Right? And then I was like, who is Sadie actually? Like, is she, how is she involved in everything? I mean, right now we know that, you know, through their conversation, we know that she's some sort of a romantic partner for Ted, romantic interest for Ted, and then...
For Jack?
For Jack, yeah.
Not his dad.
Yeah, Ted's dad, yeah. Okay, for Jack. And then, and we also know that she knows who the Valentine brothers are. I actually didn't do my homework, so I don't know if they're real.
Neither did I.
Cool enough. Oops. Yeah. So she seems like a... Like, I think that was one of those, like... I don't know. Maybe it's because we just talked about, like, how the dialogue sort of, like, bumps instead of rolls. And then I feel like a certain part of me is like, this is just a plot device. Because you know, she said... She was, like, rambling, and then she was like, Valentine Brothers, and then, hey, why are you smiling, Jack? And then he said, because you've heard of the Valentine Brothers. And, like, aww, you know, it's, like, to incite that reader emotion where a reader would think, huh, so they're right for each other, you know?
Mm-mm-mm.
structured to make us feel that way.
It is, and I'm not sure if you're saying like the structure is a little too obvious, but I kind of I mean, it's, you know, it's just not as skillfully done as we're used to by Robinson.
Right. It's forgivable, but yeah.
Shall we move on?
Yes.
Do we get a bit more of the pirate? Mm. Now, I'll admit, at the very beginning of this page, where we start talking about, like, his wife Donna's eyes, black like jet, still glistened before him. He misses her, blah, blah, blah. Now, I know just dark eyes does not an ethnicity make. But I'll be like, huh, I wonder if they're going to do something with that. Of like, you know, maybe here we have the, admittedly, he's dead, so pale. But I'm thinking more typical European white. Maybe they'll do something with that. And then we have, like, the Muslim corsairs of Barbary with their scimitars and their cruelty and their massive rams. Blah, blah, blah. Like, I guess, well, maybe an interracial marriage wasn't where we were going with the dark eyes. Like, yes, she was a foreign beauty. But those Muslims! Dirty Muslims! Like, it was just, you know, an interesting change. And but I guess also, just to throw it out there, 97, I don't quite recall there being anywhere near as much, you know, active anti-Muslimness in the world. Like, I'm not even sure how much awareness there was in media that they exist. Like, I don't think it was, you know, quite where it was now.
Okay. This is an interesting viewpoint for me to take in because, you know, I grew up in a country with a very large Muslim population. Mm. So, it never really struck me as, like, people would not know about them. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things that you take for granted because in schools and everything, you have, like, the Muslim stalls, in canteens. Ah. Yeah, and we have like different receptacles, and we sort of like know things like that there are animals that are considered unclean, and so we shouldn't like if we have dogs, we should try to like be considerate and like keep them on a leash so they don't run up to anyone who's Muslim because technically dogs are unclean. And then, yeah, and then things like, you know, when you, we also learn about their practices because there are national holidays in Singapore that are for Muslims. So we get the day off as well. And then we have to learn about, like, of course, everybody learns about each other. Like, there's Chinese New Year, and I'm Chinese, so people have to learn about Chinese New Year, even though they're not Chinese. And then we have to learn about this thing called Hari Raya Haji, and Hari Raya Puasa. And, like, you know, there's also a very significant Indian population. So we learn about things like Deepavali, which is also a national holiday, things like that. Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah, so that was quite, like, it was so, I think I took it for granted. Like, yeah, it was just one of those things, like, after you become an adult, and then you're like, okay, there are people in the world who hate my friends, you know?
Yeah.
So, that's really strange.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and like, you know, 97, I'm sure in the adult world, there were, it's not like people were like, what are these people? It wasn't like, thinking back to the high school me in 97, it wasn't a part of the conversation.
Right, okay.
You know? And like, you kind of like, you know, everyone knew about Christians, of course, and people knew about, like atheists were probably more of the media conversation than Muslims. And, you know, it's hard to look. This is, 20 years ago. So I could very easily be mixing stuff up. But at least looking back on it, it's kind of like, okay. And at least in in South Georgia or mm. Eastern Georgia, where I'm from, mm. Or at least where I was living at that time, mm. you know, you had friends who were Jews, and you kind of like knew who they were. And so there was like a little bit of that connection, of course, with World War II. Everyone was familiar with Jews and their plight. But just as like a, like, I don't know if I actively knew Muslims growing up. Like, okay. And I'm sure, like, I must have, but it just wasn't a thing.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that, like, it's kind of like, you know, you didn't know until almost, you know, so like, oh, hey, that guy's a Mormon, huh?
Oh, okay.
Like, it just wasn't something that either they promoted or that we paid attention to. You know, I'm not saying that's necessarily good or bad. That it wasn't a thing of talk. Well, obviously, hey, diversity kicks ass. Like, there we go. But so kind of having this here. Yeah.
Like, yeah. All
right.
Yeah, I get it. I don't know if you know this, but the president of Singapore is currently a Muslim woman, and but the president of Singapore is just like basically the financial minister. There is a finance minister, but the president is like in charge of the Singaporean reserves. So the big decisions, so called, are made by the prime minister. So we have that kind of system, yeah.
No, I don't know about the Singaporean government.
Yeah, but people are actually unhappy that the president ran unopposed. So it's like another kind of worms. But I personally think it's quite cool that someone, you know, that important is a Muslim woman. So
I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. I don't know about that. I don't know. I might be like isolated in my support. Yeah. Okay, so we know that this pirate is like, he's had some kind of skirmishes with like other people. Groups. Yeah, and it's not just the Muslims, wasn't it? It was just, or maybe it was like different groups of them.
Yeah.
Like because like that, there are a lot of name drops.
Like, yeah.
Right, and I haven't really like figured out like it's just there for an instant, and you're just supposed to sort of like read between the lines. And which I get it, it's like one of those devices, but it's fine. But it's more of like, well, there's so many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I totally took it as all the name drops through here is kind of like a way of focusing on specifics to hopefully imply a very broad reality.
Yeah.
That none of the specifics mentioned were story wise important in and of themselves. Was kind of what took all that. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. But well, at least we know that he has a very colorful history, and he's a ghost. He is explicitly referred to as a ghost. So I don't know if we're supposed to interpret that as like literal or figurative, but you know, because like a ghost can also mean someone who has sort of like come back from a very dangerous, almost, he might almost have died kind of situation. So
I totally took this as a legit, literal, he is a ghost, a supernatural being.
Oh, okay. I did as well, so I was just, like, putting it out there.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Now let's go to the litter.
Yeah.
Jack still has his beard. Yeah. So, we forgot to say, for those of you who don't actually have the book in your hands, I don't know why, but... Jack got a call from Ted saying, oh, yes. Hey, you have a letter. It's from Diane Belmont.
Yes. Right. We met a few issues ago.
We did. Lovely woman. Yeah. So.
I was really I mean, it's hard for me to read this letter and separate what we're learning here from my just kind of overall remembrances of the DC universe around this time.
Okay.
So that's like, it's kind of like, oh man, this is good, but kind of also like I have the trying to be spoiler free, so I'll just choose a general word like the emotions of what comes after this.
Okay.
So it's like, aw. Aw.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But I like the letter, especially and how it bridges, again, it bridges the kind of old guard history of DC, kind of real or more specifically created for this, and where Jack is now as kind of the new person on the in the universe.
I see. Ha. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought the letter was very timely, very charming. Jack, you want a shop, and I shall pay for it. Yeah, and at the same and I'm able to get the cash because I liquidated all my assets to pay for my trip around the world. Oh, not around the world, to the east or something.
Yes.
Where's the east, by the way? Like China?
Where we are now.
Okay.
What, anything including Japan to India, maybe?
Okay. What's when you say like the east, it's like Asia?
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay. Oh, interesting. I mean, we do say the west for like Europe and the Americas. So, okay. It's always boggled me how we like sort of like came in agreement to these terms.
Yeah.
Right?
And then, yeah. Now, do you also have that kind of like hiccup of like, yeah, but what about Australia?
That's true, huh?
East, well,
yeah, that's true. I've never thought about that. But I've always noticed how nobody talks about the north or the south.
It's true.
Nobody says the north. We are to visit the north. Okay, maybe like to see the Aurora Borealis. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's a little, you know, kind of a specialized.
Yeah. But anyway, Wesley and Diana are going to the east, so good luck. I don't know the story. You might know the story. That's why you like
talked
a little bit about the DC universe, huh?
Yeah. And it's very spoilery, which is why I don't really want to add too much at this point. Just go, huh.
So, spoilery for Starman, you're saying? Okay. I get it.
Yeah, like, I can't remember, honestly, if there's too many direct Starman spoilers, but there's definitely future spoilers, which I think may have repercussions in Starman.
Got it. Okay. Alright, then. So, anyway, letter time told Jack that he has money now to start his shop, and we go to the next scene with Jack and Ted in the conservatory, I think.
Yeah. And this, you know, I tend to like Ted a lot. And I like the kind of that romanticism he has about being, even though, you know, this is Wesley and Diane going on what they promote as like their end of life trip. And how he's envious of that. You know, he hears him talking about like a crazy stunt. It'll be the death of him, and he's jealous. Like, you know, you can very much feel that he, even though he's happy, he still has that long for adventure in him.
Yeah. You know, I just suspect that there's something going on with Ted because, you know, in a previous issue, he said something about how he doesn't really age. And then it's like, maybe he can't leave because it's like, you know, life force is here in the conservatory. I don't know. It's just me speculating.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah. And I guess we can't go too deep in one single shot about, like, what does it mean to kind of have all of your friends grow old and pass away.
Yeah.
And to be kind of too old to do what you're known for, but not old enough to just kind of hang around.
Yeah. Ted should be friends with Shade.
I would like to see that conversation. That would be nice.
Yeah. Okay, anyways, we see Jack going, "Dad, I have money!"
Yay.
Yeah, but there's one of those like magic Starman moments in the dialogue here, right? I really like that one. Okay, and
which one do you mean?
The one where, like, you know, if you wanted money, you could have just asked me. Yeah. That bit. Yeah.
That panel of him just kind of looking down.
Yeah. That one. I really liked that one. It was one. You see, this is the kind of stuff that Robinson does really well. Like, the whole, like, sarige naku, how do you say that? Offhand, punch you in the gut kind of moments.
Yeah. I really like those three panels for all the different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love the punch in the gut. I love Jack's, like, the many different reasons he could be looking down. And I also, in my head, when Ted speaks up about, did you hear the latest about Pip?
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, the interpretation I'm choosing is that he knows he pushed a sore spot, probably without really meaning to.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's just, like, brushing over it.
I didn't mean to hurt Jack, feel bad
about not asking for money. Like, I was just asking, but here he is actually feeling bad. So let me, hey, did you hear the latest about this? And let's get into a safe conversation water and try and smooth over that. I like that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Very nice bit here. Okay. Do we go on?
I guess really story-wise, the only thing we need to mention is this is where Jack gets the lead about the stool pigeon Dudley Donovan.
Aha!
Yeah.
And we know that you said in your synopsis that he has, his family, Donovan's family, has a little bit of history with that. Ted.
Yeah. He knew his grandfather back in the 40s.
Mm-hmm. And he was a disreputable little fellow.
Mm.
Yeah. So, and he does look very slimy when he appears.
Yes.
I like it. Yeah.
And then, sorry,
you were saying before I interrupted you.
Oh, I was just going to say, we're getting the ghost, and I don't know. I don't really have, you know. Honestly, for up until the ghost takes actions, I don't really have too much more to say about him.
It's kind of right.
Here's the story.
Right. Yeah. One cool thing though, where he sort of transforms, removes it. It's that maybe because I really liked Sailor Moon growing up. And, you know, Japanese heroes, they always transform.
Yes.
It's not like, you know, Superman where he, like, runs into a telephone booth and takes off his clothes or whatever. We're talking, like, real, like, transformations, like, impossible. You use a thing and then you shout as a phrase, right? And then
you, like, poof.
Yeah, and there's like a transformation sequence and everything with music and sparkles. And like, yeah. So that's I like that. But over here we have a really toned down version of it where he like goes from ghost mode into like he becomes like his skin is colored. Like it's colored human. And then you see like he has that his bandana or something, it goes down his face, but he didn't actually do something. He has a little bit more Sailor Moon-ish kind of touch to it because he like holds his sword, right? And then it goes like shing, and then and it's like his transfer. We call it in our Sailor Moon verse a transformation pen.
How it goes from the ghost pirate to the pirate superhero.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Ha ha! I'm alive.
He is, yeah, flesh and bone. So we know that he there's a little bit more pirate speak thrown into the narration, but yeah, we know that he's gonna kill some people.
Yar, Yoshiokiyo, yar.
Yar. Okay. So, do we go on to the meeting of Jack and Donovan?
Yeah, let's go on.
Okay.
And another little thing of I liked the kind of like, hey, our families used to work, and Jack was like, it's kind of being nice about the relationship. I like. I both kind of like and kind of eye-rolled at the convenience of the, oh, yeah, I do have a discretionary fund for paying stoolies. Yeah. It just, you know, I get it. It felt convenient. It didn't break the story, but I was like, oh, okay, I'll roll with that.
Yeah.
And then I mean, just, like I said, to like, be honest. It makes me wonder if, since there are so many little seeds all throughout Starman. Mm. I always, when I read a page like this, I wonder, is this something that's going to grow into something? Or is this just kind of a, here's something that's kind of only going to happen in this issue.
I hear you. Yeah. Okay. But then again, to be really, I feel like there was no other way to drop that tidbit about the stipend, because otherwise like in future chapters there would be no incentive, you know. There would be like, why is Jack listening to all these people, you know? We would be like, but he it's because he isn't paying for it. It's like the Odairs who are paying for it, right? Yeah. So that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
No, and you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. All I can say is, like, it was just one of the things of, like, if this issue had been a tighter issue, I would have gone with it.
Like,
there have been enough little hiccups, bumps in the road so far this issue. That was just another little bump that just kind of made me go, and then just kept moving on.
Yeah, I totally get what you mean. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so next page.
It's fun.
Fireworks, magic. What is this building? I don't know what it is. It's like a joke shop?
It's a hideout, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's a joke shop, isn't it?
Yeah. A little joke shop with Pip and a guy in the shadows.
Oh, you know that lady in the front
with the super
flowers? With the flowers. Yeah. Maybe she's a witch and she went to the magic shop to buy stuff. Like, she does look a little bit like one. Yeah, or those flowers are like for magic tricks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, yeah. I don't know. That's like the establishing shop.
Yeah, and you could kind of argue that the guy to the, I'm guessing now, with the, on the left, with the brown jacket and blondish hair, could be John Constantine, which is kind of DC's resident London magician guy.
Ooh.
It's not, but you could make that argument, you know?
Okay, that's cool. That's fanfic. Yeah.
Can I talk a little bit about the coloring in this issue?
Go ahead.
The reason I'm bringing it up on this page is that this is one of the pages where I actually initially read it wrong.
Okay.
Because I read from the "So when do we issue our demands, Dr. Pip?" My eyes went across instead of up and down because of the way the color gradation worked.
Ah, okay.
But like we have that, the way the elbows are almost touching of those two henchmen,
yeah,
and it goes from like that light purple to a darker blue. Mm. Like my eyes just went like, oh, that's obviously the panel break since it kind of lines up with the top panel. So rather than reading down, I read across. It was like, partly because of the coloring and partly just because of the flow. And then, like, it just got me thinking about one of the things I've noticed about the coloring of this issue is it seems like the colorist was going for something, but didn't quite hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of this issue seems to be taking place in one day.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're outside, the sky color is slowly going from a morning to a night.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just, I don't know, there seems to be a few too many times where the palette, the transitions, jump back and forth a little bit.
Okay.
So it's like, I kind of see what you're going for, and it's a neat idea, but because there are, I don't know, issues, it just pulls me out of it a little bit.
Okay.
And it's not that it's bad, and I don't want to be like, nah, 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 but it's like, it's such a neat idea, but,
yeah,
you know, because it was a swing and a big miss, or a swing and just enough of a miss, it disrupts the flow for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got about the color.
Nice catch, because I didn't notice it. I see. Okay, cool.
Hmm.
I mean, that colorists actually try to do things like that. I mean, I see. Okay, so, is it me or does Starman sort of break through the ceiling?
I took it as a kicking in the door, but sure.
Okay. Yeah,
definitely a breaking in.
Okay. Yeah, it's, I was thinking, like, why did you have to do that, Jack? But yeah, dramatic entrance number one. Yeah, so, he's making a device, right? A bomb or something? The bat guy? And then he's like, Jack is like, no, I'm a stop.
Device?
Uh-huh. Good one. Good
Thank
one.
You. Thank
yeah.
You.
So, there's a pretty nice action scene, I think, right? That
yes.
follows?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I liked it.
Mm. Anything you want to say about it?
I was very happy when we got to the action scene and things kind of picked up a little bit.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
I liked the flow, I liked the power of it, you know, I liked the quickness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll kind of save the rest for when we do the wrap-up. Haha. How about you?
I liked the weird sounds. Prack! Nah! Because these are words that you don't really see in English, but you hear it a lot in, like, where I come from. Like, I come from Singapore, so we do bastardize English a lot to suit our vocalizations, because to us, sounds do sound like that, like, brah, nah, and when we spell it out, and we do, we are often made fun of by English speakers. But yeah, but I mean, it's right here in publication, so I really appreciate that.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think my favorite is the Bok, the B-O-K, with the headbutt. Bok.
Yeah, definitely we would use these sounds. Like, you know, there's this sound in Singlish that goes like jiba boom. Do you know what that is?
Is it like a bomb going off?
Yes, like it's like an explosion. Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
It does sound, nobody like it's so just one of those like kind of like dowdy, is that a good word for this? Like not very elegant, you know, it's not very it's not a very elegant use of language, and people are like, that is not sophisticated, stop using that. But here in comics you see it.
That's why you gotta hang out with more comic readers, you know. We're with the Chris Blatt.
Oh nice. Yeah, so I like that bit. I liked all the swooshing art. I don't know how to, do you know what I mean? Like it felt very fluid. It was very, yes. You could see that. I really liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. The fluidness is great. We've talked about it in the past, but I like how Tony Harris, when he does fight scenes, kind of bridges the gap between like serious drawing and almost like Looney Tunes type of like, whoa, type of like very cartoony violence, you know, which works so well. And then we get a hand cut off, which is like, whoa.
That
was surprising in this issue.
Yeah. And
the fact that when the hand is cut off, it's shooting a bullet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of gruesome. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think it was still quite PG because it wasn't, you know, you couldn't see the bone and stuff. Yeah. So the way they treated the art here, I think that was quite an eye-opener for me. Like, what I mean is, like, the way the blood sort of, like, squiggled out into droplets. Yeah,
that's a great word for it.
Yeah, so that was quite interesting. Oh, okay, so this is how it's illustrated in comic books, you know, because, you know, I'm very new to comic books, so I think this is the first time I've ever seen a hand being cut off on paper. So, I mean, I've read, like, manga, and it's quite graphic, I think, compared to comic books.
Like, it depends on the era.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because, like, you know, I've read this one called Guns. Wow, that one is like really super graphic.
We'll get you to read some later issue of Invincible and things like that, where there's lots of entrails.
You know? Oh man, no. Okay.
So I do kind of like the dialogue working into conjecture with the pictures to establish that Pip's getting away. And there's something about that last page image of our two heroes in the fireworks with the bat, pack, bam of the fireworks and stuff going off. That I liked the cliffhanger feeling. Like it felt like an ending to the issue, but not the story. And I really liked that.
Yeah. They really did the last scene really well. Like,
yeah.
Despite all the bumps in this issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I also liked that the fire seemed to be like, it seemed to be because of the fireworks and the, right? It was like how, I'm trying to say, like, I can hear the scene, I can picture the way things are like, boom. That's what I liked about this as well. Like, you aren't, it's not just the heroes, but the background of, You feel the chaos. You can like sense it and touch it, and then hear it. It's a very strong image.
Yes.
So nice detail there with the fireworks.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Should we wrap up the issue?
We should.
What were your takeaway thoughts on the issue then?
Well, I feel like to be super honest, it's a first part of four, right? And I understand how they're trying to sort of like build the foundation for it, but it felt like a little bit too drawn out.
Yeah.
Like for one issue, like I would have preferred maybe three or something, and then they sort of like cram lots of interesting stuff in the first one. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, like. I'm kind of with you. This kind of, like, there's a whole lot of interesting things going on here. Mm-hmm. But we're not really given any reason, explanation for what's going on. Like, we've seen, I'm pretty sure in the past we've seen a few appearances by the Ghost kind of hinting at, like, I've got secrets, blah, blah, blah. And we get a lot of, like, interesting filler about the Ghost, but, you know, there's no real, like, well, what's he here for? What's going on? Outside of the compelling idea of, hey, it's a ghost pirate, which that'll get you pretty far, I'll admit. I don't really have any real on-paper reason to be interested in the ghost pirate story other than ghost pirate. And here, like, I fully latched on during our re-look through with Pip. Pip's even saying, like, oh, I've got reasons, but we'll get into them later. And to kind of, like, we had just a bunch of scenes of interesting ideas, but no rationale for them. And so it did kind of make the first, two-thirds of this comic just feel like a bit too much filler. And, you know, some of it is just the stylistic choice of when you're reading a Robinson book. You're going to have a lot of talk. You're going to have a lot of character development, which is great, but I think in an issue like this where it's not as balanced with the actual progression of the story, it either needs to be very dynamic character development, which we didn't really get here, or it needs to be plot developed. And I think here we just got kind of like just a little bit. We got too much explanation without too much progression, either for character development or story development.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah. Well, it's okay. But
they can't all be the best issue ever.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We still have the next three issues in this arc to look forward to, so.
Yes. And, I mean, you know, I'm not going to put the issues away anytime soon.
Okay.
All right, well, I guess where can they find you on the webs?
Okay, you can find me at Quek Channel, Quek Channel, on Twitter, on Facebook, and what's the other one I use? YouTube, that's right.
Oh no!
Yeah, I just haven't been, like, I've been pretty much a hermit for the past 3 months, but that's a story for another time. How about you, Brent? Where can they find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, at DeadTroubadour. You can find me on my main website, deadlytroubadour.com. You can go on over to Facebook for the Brent Thomas author page. And, you know, all those are places where you can kind of catch up with me, see what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. And if you want to help me out or help out this show in specific, you can go to patreon.com/Brent Thomas. And that's where you can almost like put a dollar in the tip jar. And that helps me out. Gets me a little cash in the pocket to to kind of convince the family that the hours I spend doing writings and doing podcasts is actually worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening, and we hope to see you again soon.
Yeah. Thanks, you guys. So, bye. Bye. There's a star.
Children use it, but all the children boogie.